Okay, so lichvod Lag BaOmer next week, and because this is definitely the longest of the, it's over there somewhere. I don't know where it went. Longest of the Yerushalmi's. Agadatas in the Yerushalmi Shviit. I want to do the story of Rishon Bar Yochai in the cave. Now, much has been written about the story of Rishon Bar Yochai in the cave, but I want to read through the two stories as they appear in the Bavli and in the Yerushalmi. If we can, I would like to, as much as possible, focus our analysis first on understanding the stories through the lens of the differences, and they are vast, in the presentation, in the Bavli and Yerushalmi, and obviously as much as we can get from either story, great. This is not a comprehensive treatment of the stories because, you know, we don't have forever, and it is a very, very, very well-known story, and therefore it is written on extensively. So let's start at least quickly running through the Bavli's version, which you probably know, but just to get it in your head, when you see the Yerushalmi's very different version of this. Sorry, as well. Spoilers?
Of the differences.
Did I talk to you about the differences?
No.
Who talked about the differences?
Oh.
Because
he gave a shoot on that one year. And we got a lot of feedback.
Like, negative feedback about.
Okay, well.
Song is probably the more accurate.
Oh, that may be true. That is probably true. fine. So the Bavli says as follows. Va'amai karule. So the Gemara is in the middle of a discussion. And has a story from Rabbi Yehuda, who is called Rosh HaMidabrim Bechol Makom, the person who talks first at every place. So the Gemara says, Va'amai karule Rosh HaMidabrim Bechol Makom. Why is he called the first person who talks? That sounds very complimentary. Gemara says, don't worry, it's not. No. D'tanya Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Shimon V'yatev Yehuda Ben Garim Gabayu. So Yehuda Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon were sitting there and discussing, and Yehuda Ben Garim was there as well. Ben Garim. Patech Rabbi Yehuda Amar. So they start talking in a discussion about the Romans. And Rabbi Yehuda says, Kama noim ma'aseim shul mazu. Oh, how wonderful are these people's actions. Tiknu shvakim, tiknu ksharim, tiknu merchatzaot. They built marketplaces, they built bridges, they built...
Unironically.
Yeah. They built bathhouses. Amazing. Amazing. What a society we live in. Rabbi Yossi Shatak. Rabbi Yossi said nothing. Rabbi Shimon, Nana Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai Vomar. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, please, kol ma shetiknu lo tiknu el tzarech atzmon. Whatever they made for themselves. You want to know why? Tiknu shvakim. You know why they made marketplaces? Lahoshiv bar zonot. So they had a place to put prostitutes. Merchatzaot. Why do they have bathhouses? La'adein bahen atzman, to make themselves beautiful, and enjoy. Gisharim, they made bridges. Lito b'meches, to charge taxes. Because as we all know, bridges are insanely expensive for those of us who are from New York. Good God. Right? I grew up in Staten Island. Oh my God. The village on a bridge is like, what, $16 now? Yeah. I mean, it's insane. It's crazy.
Because, like, you go to Staten Island less. Unless you go to high school.
Yeah, well, Staten Island, you if you live in Staten Island, you have the Staten Island Pass, so it costs a little bit less. But it's crazy.
The Staten Island Pass?
Yeah, it's easy pass, and it costs less.
Oh, we also have easy pass. Okay,
No. But if you're a Staten Island resident, you get a discount. Not that it's cheap.
Brooklyn,
I don't think so. I don't know. Anyways, I haven't lived there in a very, 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 very long time. I haven't lived full-time in Staten Island since I was in high school.
Oh, wow.
You know. Halach Yehuda ben Garim and Sipar Livrehem. Yehuda ben Garim went and he told on them to the Romans, Vinishmu Lamalchut. Amru, Yehuda she'ila yit'ale. And they said, Yehuda, who praised us, shall be elevated. Yossi she'shatak. Yossi said nothing. Yigale litzipori. He shall be exiled to Tzipori. Shimon she'gina. And Shimon who made fun of us, who denigrated us, yehare. You shall kill him. Yeah, there's definitely a parallel to that. Yes. Also, there's a lot going on here. This is a quite a... Yes. And that is also a trope. Azalhu Ubrei, Tashu Bei Midrasha. So him and his son went, and where did they go? Beis Medrash! Because no one's going to look for Shimon Bar Yochai in the Beis Medrash. Who would look for him there?
That's how you know that it's from the Talmud, probably.
And each day his wife would bring him a little bit of food, a little bit of water. As the gzera, as the decree to search for them, right, got worse. Women are flighty. Yes, this is bad. We can't rely on your mother. Maybe they'll torture her and she'll tell where we are. They go hide in a cave. Itrachesh Nisa. A miracle happened. Ivrulo Charuva. A carob tree grew. Ena Demaya and a water spring. Right? And they took off their clothes and they covered themselves in sand. Kula Yoma Garase. And they would learn all day like that, covered just in sand. The Idan Siluye, so their clothes wouldn't wear out. So while they're learning, so they'll just sit there covered in sand, right? Two talking heads, literally, right? The Idan Siluye, when they would daven, Lavshim Mekasu Matli. Then they would get out of the sand, put on their clothes, daven, and do this again. V'hadra Mishalcho Minayu Geichet Lo Livli, and take off their clothes again, so it wouldn't wear out.
How do they not get found?
They're in a cave.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Oh.
They're in a cave.
When did they
just now, when they said, we can't trust your mother, go to the cave.
Oh, okay.
Itivu, you know this story. Itivu Trezer Shnei B'Marta. They spent 12 years in the cave. Ata Eliyahu become a Bitcho D'Marta. After 12 years, Eliyahu comes and says, hello. Amar Mandlio de Levar Nyoche de Midkesar Vato Gzerata. Gzerate. Who should tell Bar Yochai that the Caesar has died and his Xera is nullified? Nifaku, so they came out. Chazu inoshe, they called Karve Vizare. And they saw people planting. Amrin, what the heck are they doing? Working. Manichin chai oilam, oiskin machai shah. What? They're giving up the world to come and they're involved in this world. Koma comes to know the name Yad Nisraf. So they got, suddenly became Superman and they have laser eyes and wherever they looked, it got burnt up. Yatza Batkal Vamra, so a voice came out of heaven and said, Lahachriv Olami Yitzatem, you left the cave to destroy my world. Chizru Lemaratchem, please go back to your cave. Hadur Azul Itivu Tresa Yarchishata. So they go for another 12 months. Amri Mishpat Rishayim Begehenom Shneim Asar Chodesh. They said, even the wicked of the wicked only spend 12 months in hell. So I think we've been punished enough. Let's get out of here. Yatza Batkal Vamra Tsumi Maratchem. So Batkal came out and said, yeah, okay, leave. Nifaku, they left. Kol Heichad Havei Machi Rebbe Elazar. Havei Masi Rebbe Shimon. But this time, Elazar still burnt things with his eyes, but Shimon had anti-laser eyes, right? And he would heal it.
He was that holy.
Yeah. Anti-laser eyes. There you go. Omar Lo Bini. And he said to his son, listen, Dail olam anivata. Okay, so not everyone is a tzaddik. It's enough for the world that's you and me. Okay. Bahade panyo demale shabata. One Friday afternoon, chazudu sabad avinokitre midane asa virahid ben ashmasha. They saw an elderly man running with two myrtle bundles, two adasim bundles. Amrle hanach lamolach. He said, "What are you doing?" Amrle lekavet Shabbos. It's for Shabbos. So why don't you suffice with one? He said, no. Chad keneged Zachor, v'chad keneged Shamor. Zachor and Shamor. That's why I have two. Okay, it's like two candles. Amar le Levrei, and Reb Shimon Bar Yochai said to his son, wow. Chazi kama chaviv and mitzvah al Yisrael. Oh, the Jews, they love mitzvah so much. Etivu datayon, and they calmed down. Shama Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, Chat Neinva Viglapi. Pinchas ben Yair is his son-in-law, brother-in-law, wait. Son-in-law. What? He came out to greet them. Aile Leve Bone, they come out, Arich Le Bisre. They brought him to the bathhouse and they had to tend his flesh because, you know, 12 years in sand. Not great. You know, it's like 5 minutes in the dry winter and my hands need cream. 12 years in sand plus another year, you know, not so great. Chazad Avabe Pile Begufe, and he saw that in fact his skin is cracking. Havi kabachi the konatron dimat ene the kametzavchi. Like he was crying, and the salt from the tears landed on it and caused him pain. One second, I just lost my place. One second. There we go. Amar lo, oy li shereticha kach. Oy, I have to see you like this. Amar lo, ashrecha shereticha kach. No, amazing. You're so lucky you see me like this. She'il mole lo itani bekach lo matzata bekach. If you didn't see me like this, you wouldn't find me like this. Dime ikara give me makshir shem mechai kushya mefarek le original in the yard trace peruke. It used to be that when you would ask me when I would ask a question, Rabbi Zimbal Jar would give 12 answers. But now when you ask me a question, I have 24 answers. Oh! So Amar, and now he said, Hoel Vitrakesh Nisa, since God made a miracle, Ezel Atkan Milta. Let me do something, a mitzvah for somebody. So when Yaakov came in, because he was Shalem, because he survived, so he did something for the city. Some say he made a coin. Some people, he said, he made markets. Some people, he made merchatzot, which, of course,
made a coin.
A coin, yes.
Is Mordechai saying this?
Yes. He's making a drasha. He's saying, Yaakov, Avinu.
He's
quoting Rav and Shmuel. He's, or whatever. He's invoking an idea, okay? Or the Gemara is invoking an idea. That. Okay. After a miracle happens, you do something to thank God. So Amar Milta Dibar the Takuna, he says there's something that needs to be fixed. Amar Leikaduchta Debesavikumavit Beitzara Lakoanam Lakufe. Said, yeah, there's a place where we're not sure if there are dead people buried there, so it's driving the Kohanim nuts. Because Shlomo, he can't go there. Right? He can't go to that whole area. We don't know if there are graves there. Amar Ikvainish Yadis Khaligakatara. Said, does anyone know if it was Tahor? Amar Le Yusava. There's an elderly man, Kanki Din Zakai Turmisa Truma, and he tells us that over here, Yochum Din Zakai had Truma. Not even Nami Achi, Goichad Avi Kashi, Tarev, Goichad Avi Rafe, Sine. So he would go around and say, oh, the ground is hard, it's Tahor, nothing could have been buried here. And if it was soft, he would say, he would put a mark and say, this is where a grave is. Amru Saba, Tir ben Yochai ben Akvaros. People started saying, or the Saba, the grandfather, the elderly man said, oi, what are you doing? You're being metar a cemetery. Amru le ilmali lo iti imanu bafi lo iti imanu velo nivne imanu yafa ata amarta. He said, if you weren't with me and you didn't see how careful I was being, you could have said it. Achshav Shayita Imanu Venipta Imanu Yomru Zonu Garkazu Azuta Mikham Lokal Shekain. He says, you know, prostitutes help each other, right? Look beautiful. But Talmidei Chachamim, they're at odds with each other, right? You're helping me and you're stabbing me in the back. Yoivene Vinach Navshe. So now he looked at him, right? And those laser eyes came back and the guy died. And Nafak Lushuka Chaz Yehuda ben Gerim. In the meantime, he went out to the Shuk and he saw Yehuda ben Gerim, who started this whole nightmare. Amar Adayin Yesh Lazelo Boilam said, this guy's still in the world. Not in Boineva, so Gal Shalat Samod. He looked at him and he turned into a pile of bones. Okay, that's the Bavli's story. Wonderful. Okay, great.
They feel the need to, like, disparage him. Like, yeah, this guy.
Okay, so that's the Bavli's version. The Yerushalmi's version, which is in our Gemara in Perek Tet, Aloch Aleph, in Shviit, if you want to look inside, but otherwise I put it on the sheet, comes up in a much more prosaic context, where the Gemara is talking about the very deep and mystical story of Svichin.
First,
yes, clearly Svichin. The Gemara is talking about Svichin.
Right. Yes. We didn't do this during the Svichin, so you're out.
Well, this is the Svichin. If you would like the background to it, I'll go one line back. I probably should have put it on. But if you look at the bottom here, and I'm Aleph on the base in the art scroll one, got it?
Yeah.
The Chachamim Rambam call us Svichim Asurim, right? The Chachamim say all Svichim are Asur. Shimon Bar Yochai said only cabbage is Asur, okay? Shimon Bar Yochai have a Ovid b'shmitita, b'chad chama, b'chama chad, Milaket Svichin Shvi'ed. He was going around, he saw someone collecting Svichin. Omer Lei Vilet Asur. And he said to him, how are you eating Svichin? How are you collecting Svichin? It's Asur. V'lav Svichin Inun. Omer Lei V'lad Atum Matiran. But you say Svichin or Mutter except for cabbage. So what are you yelling at me? Omer Lei. But my friends disagree with me. I'm the minority. Kara Alav. And then Rishon Vayechad said, oh, you're following me against the other rabbis? Anyone who breaches the fence shall be bitten by a snake. And the snake came and killed it.
Of course.
Of course. Now, that is the context, in that context, of Rishon Vayechad enforcing other people's psak of Svichin, we get our story. Where the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai avit mir b'maratot tlet eser shnein b'marat charuvin. He spent 13 years, no 12 plus 1, just 13 years in a carob cave until his body was covered with rust. Hachel guvu chaluda. The south tlet eser shnein. After 13 years, Amar leina nefakami makola alama. Let's see what's going on. What's heard in the world? Nafik v'yatev lei alpuma de ma'arta. So he went to the opening of the cave. Chama chad sayid sayid siporin. He saw a huntsman hunting birds. Paris mitzudate. He spread out his net. Shama brat kala. He heard a baskal come from Shamayin. Amra dimus. Saying, the bird is acquitted. You know, like the turkey thing on, right? Oh, right. The turkey pardon. The turkey pardon. The presidential turkey pardon. And the bird escaped. And Rishon Vayechai said, wow, Amar Tzipor Mibalad Shemaya Lo Yavda. A bird can't be caught unless God judges him. Cool, Kosik in Barnasha. People for sure. Chadchama Dishadchon Minayla Milaya Amar Nechot Nichamu Bahadin De Musin De Tveria. So he goes out, he realizes that he is granted, so he leaves and he goes to the public baths of Tveria. And he says, oh, I need to do what my forefathers did, who set up, right, these duty-free shops, who set up all the things, right, same, right, I need to do something for the city. So Amar Nichde Tveri Vavinasev, Turmus and Vekatsitz Umaklik, Maklik, the Kolhein, Dave Meta, Vetayev Uslak, Le Min Lael. So, he said, let's purify Tveria. He took lupines and he cut them and threw them down in an irregular fashion. And whenever there was a corpse, it would float to the surface. I'll get you a picture. It's a lupine is a, yeah, it's this flower. You ever go to Givat HaTor Musin? It's in Yerushalayim. It's where they have a lot of those. I think it's Yerushalayim. That's a different, there's more than one, but like places where you can find it. I think that's the official term. Turmusin. Yeah, it's our modern native. Yeah. Chamte chad kuti akuti sadar amar lema aza mafle bahon saba dudoi nasiv chad mir aza vadmarta hein didachi. So he said, I'm going to mess him up. And he found a place where he'd already been matire and he put a dead body in it.
What a prank.
Alta gershim reyachai amar le lo dochet atar palan. And he said, oh, didn't you purify that space? Eat of anim mafik lo mitamon. Tzipa, Reb Shimon ben Yochai, Baruch HaKodesh, not Nusham. Reb Shimon ben Yochai saw Baruch HaKodesh that the guy had put it there. V'omer, and he said, Gozer ani al ha'elyonim sheyerdu v'al ha'tachtonim sheyalu. I decree that those who are on top of the earth should go down, and those who are underneath the ground should come up. So the Kuti found himself magically transported with into the buried alive. No, the dead body came up, switched places with him. And that's what happened.
Oh my God.
Mar Avar Uke Mugdila, when he passed Magdala Shamakola de Safra Amarai Bar Yochai Midke Tveria. You heard him saying Bar Yochai is purifying Tveria. And Amar le Yavo Elohim Shlomati Shvera Atita li Tahir. He says, yes, I once heard such a Misaira, but you didn't believe me. So Afil Chin Lohimnin, you didn't believe me. Aiti mi Anasa Gal Shalat Samo. He said, you didn't believe me he was going to become Tahir, and he turned into a pile of bones.
Okay.
Very good. So that took us 20 minutes just to read the story. Okay. So here are the two stories of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Let's try again. There is so much on Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Let's start with what we know. Okay? What is the common denominator between two stories? Let's get some common denominators. So first of all, the core of the story is that he's in the cave for 13 years. When he comes out, he does certain things for the city, including purifying the city, right? And in both cases, anybody who's cynical about it turns magically into a pile of bones, right? That's a common denominator. And in both times, the experience of being in the cave is not good for his physical health, and he has to deal with it with some sort of bathing process, right? He sees people when he comes out, sure. In both cases, there's some sort of sign from God that he should come out. A boskal, though in one case it's direct, and in one case it's a boskal about a bird from which he derives that he's supposed to leave, right? So there are certain core features to the story. Now, I'm not going to get into the question. You can look at the nice little footnote here in this volume, not the one you're borrowing, but this volume of Benny Laus the Sages, where he goes through... What?
Is that the second book?
Third. I'm not getting into the question of what's historical, what's not, because that apparently got Ron Mendick in trouble. It's clear that, right, as we've talked about in the Agadata before, often Agadata there is a historical core, and then the Gemara is trying to teach you lessons throughout presents it. These are two different stories which clearly are working off the same core, right? What the core is, who knows, right? But what I want to do is figure out what the lessons are of the versions they are. Okay, so what things are we supposed to take from this story? What do we learn about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai? So, okay, we learned some facts. He's apparently responsible for being Mitahir of the city. Okay? Shlomo can be thankful. Shlomo and Dovi and Rabbi Ginsburg can now walk through Tveria. Thank you, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Very appreciated. Good. He's a tzaddik. He gets divine protection. He's a miracle worker. This, by the way, if you go through Shimon Bar Yochai's life, is pretty consistent in the Gemara. He is a tzaddik. He is a miracle worker. He's quite aware that he's a tzaddik, right? You know, as he says in one Gemara, if there is blah, 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 if there are only this number of tzaddikim in the world and they're going to Lamaba, me and my son are among them. And if they're this, blah, 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 blah. And then the end of the Gemara is if there are only two people, it's me and my son, right? Like, he's quite aware that he is a special human being, right? This is clear. That's about where the similarities between these stories end, right? In both stories, wonderful. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is a tzaddik. He merits divine protection. He spends 13 years in a cave. It gives him bad skin. He has to deal with it in a bath. When he comes out, he does something to the city. He's mitahir it, and the people who question him and are cynical about it end up a pile of bones. Okay? I don't know. In one case, it's 12 plus 1. In one, it's 13. Kacha, kachava. Maizashaya, kacha. I don't know.
Maybe this does somehow parallel a story that happened in real life. So,
again, right, obviously, right, presumably there's some sort of his core here. Oh, for sure it was. For sure it was. Look.
You looked at someone and turned into a pile of
bones. Let us say, okay, unless Rav Shimon Bar Yochai spent 26 years in a cave, okay, not both of these stories happened as they are in the Bavli Yerushalmi, right? These are two versions of a story,
right?
And the Gemara is teaching you something, which is historical, I don't care,
yeah,
right? I want to know what it's trying to teach us in these stories. What is it doing? So what are the differences? So for, like I said, first I want to highlight the differences, and then we can move with whatever time we have left to understand what each story is trying to teach us. But first I just want descriptively,
we
right?
Put on like a board because it's a lot of differences to mark out.
Sure.
Also, the reverse,
we don't know. What? When did that happen?
For the fundraiser, they projected that.
I see. Okay. Sure. Well, Okay. Well, I should just point out that one difference, which we haven't gotten to, is how we get into these stories. In the Yerushalmi, we get in through, backhandedly, through some comment about Svichin. Right. In the Bavli, we happen to get into it, which I didn't even talk about, is that the previous line in the Gemara talks about all the sins that cause diphtheria, cause askara, and Yehuda Bar Eloi is quoted in that context as Rosh HaMedabrim B'chol Makom. Right? And then the Gemara says, why are you the Rosh HaMedabrim B'chol Makom? How did you get to be the first speaker in the Beis Medrash? And then it tells this story, because this is apparently a side product of that story.
What is the conclusion of that?
Okay.
How much of an influence the Hellenists, the Greeks had over the Jewish world and the Beis Medrash at the time?
You know, I probably should have given you a few more lines before it, okay? You know what? Let me do that, right? So, in Shabbat?
Oh, right, yeah.
Lamed Gimel, Lamed Bet. Right? So, I just gave you the story itself, but I probably should have given you a line or two more. So, there is one more relevant line there that probably should get you into this context, right? So, again, the Gemara there had asked about diphtheria, right? How do you get it? What sin? So, Shimon Bar Yochai, if you have to guess, what sin did he throw out there that might become relevant in this story?
Being Moser?
No.
Of who? Wait.
What sin would you guess or Shimra would lead you into this story?
Into wait, are we talking
about Bavli. So Shimon says, "Bittel Toyre, Bittel Toyre." If you're Mavatel Torah, right? Remember now, does this fit his personality?
Yeah,
100%. Remember when he comes out of the cave and people are not learning Torah, he melts them with his eyes. Remember that, right? He takes Bittul Torah very seriously. Now, if that wasn't, you weren't sure about this, then you. But have you guys gotten the Bracha Lamed Hey?
So
in Bracha Lamed Hey, you will find the machloket of how you balance Talmud Torah and everything else in life. So Rabbi Shmuel says it's very simple. When it's time to plant, you plant. When it's time to reap, you reap. When it's time to whatever, right? And then you learn Torah.
Whenever, right?
And Shimon Bar Yochai says if you work, if you plant when you're supposed to plant, and you eat when you're supposed to eat, and you reap when you're supposed to reap, how are you going to learn? So instead, just learn Torah all day. Oh. And God will take care of it, right? Don't worry about it, right?
Wow.
That is his personality in many places, right? Torah, 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 right? Torah. Very good. So, now, the Gemara there asks a question, but wait a second. How could Talmud Torah be the reason that you get askira? What about nashim? Women also get askira, and they're pater from Talmud Torah. And what's the Gemara's answer? No. Mevatlot et ba'alehen, because they cause their husbands not to learn Torah. So that's it, right? Oh, very good. Very, 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 very good. So already, just those lines, right? That introduction, maybe will start to help us understand the framing of the Bavli. Okay? What is the framing? If I asked you, what is the framing of the Bavli? Right? What is, like, what is the framing of the whole story?
Anything that keeps you from learning Torah is bad.
Yeah. Right? The whole story is, in many ways, is about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's relationship to Torah, right? The way it gets introduced is, what is the cause for askara? Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says, bittel Torah. And women, because they cause their husbands to be bittel Torah. Now let me tell you a story, right? Right. The framing is the Beit Midrash, right? He's in a Beit Midrash having a discussion, right? We'll get to his discussion in a minute, but he's having a discussion. Because of his discussion in the Beit Midrash, he ends up being sentenced to death by the Romans. Where does he run away to? The Beit Midrash, right? And one second. And his wife takes care of them in the Beit Midrash. And then what does he say? You can't trust women. So what does he do? He goes to the cave in which he sends up a pure Beit Midrash supported, Koilel supported by God, right? He gives up in light of the Gemara in Brachot, right? When he talks about like giving up on this world to learn Torah, he's like serious Mahadran min a Mahadran min a Mahadran. Remember, he wears nothing while he's learning Torah, right? He is in sand, right? That is his life for 13 years. He eats carobs, right? Carobs. You know, those things that they give you on Tu B'Shvat that you're like, why are you giving me this?
They're not bad. What is with this one?
They're like kind of sweet.
I mean, they are if they're fresh. If they're the fresh ones
are good.
Yeah, but the ones they give you in America for Tu B'Shvat.
I've had fresh ones in America.
Oh, okay, lucky you.
I've never had a fresh one. I've only had the brown.
Ah!
You bite off a piece, and by the end of it, it's not one thing.
Oh, God. So he lives on carobs and water, living in sand with no clothes.
Of course.
Except for davening. Right? So he can learn. Right? And then... And just like, right, in his previous statement, right, women are, that's what keeps him, like, out of the Beit Midrash, right? He can't trust women, right? That drives him to this purist thing. He comes out and he sees people and he can't deal with the fact that people are working until God sends him back. And even when he comes back, so then he sort of learns that, oh, there's beauty in mitzvah, right? But that's, like, the framing of the story, okay? What about the Yerushalmi?
Really powerful,
so,
holy guy.
Yeah, and how important is the cave story to the Yerushalmi?
It happens.
Like, the main point of the story is when it gets out. It's like, he used to look around for Svicha, and then for whatever reason, he lived in a cave for 13 years. We don't know why he ended up there. We have no idea. Right? It's not even like, why he was in the cave, what he was doing in the cave, we have no idea. No 12 and 1, no nothing, right? He's in a cave for 13 years, and very nice. He's out of the big. And when he comes back, right? So before he went in, he was the Svichin police, right? And when he comes out, he helps people deal with Taros, right? Is there any Beit Midrash here? No. Is the cave important?
No.
Barely. Right? Why do we even talk about the cave?
As a setup for another story. The fact that, like, oh, you might have wanted to know that this happened after he came out of the cave.
Yeah, well, let's be even more precise. Why do we know he's in the cave? Because since he was in the cave, his skin became dry. Since his skin became dry, he had to go to Tveria to the special baths in Tveria. Why? Because it had hot springs, right, in Tveria, right? And because he was in Tveria and used the hot springs in Tveria, he decided that Tveria would be the city that he would do a chesed for, he'd be Matahir, right? So, like, that whole thing is a background to the fact that he really liked his bath, and the bath motivated the cave. Like, that is so not important in this story, right? It's the background for why he had really bad skin, right? I mean, Anilomagzim, right? That had not exaggerating. That is the role of it in this story, right? Is why did he like Tveria so much? Because it was like, I'm listening now to the audiobook Lincoln and the Jews, okay? And there are some very funny tidbits in it. But one of his favorite Jews was, yes, he had a lot of friends with the Jews, but one of them that he apparently really, really liked, was a guy named Issachar Zachary. And what did he do? No. He was his chiropodist. He was his, what would now be known more as a podiatrist, right? Even though sometimes you do call it a chiropodist, very interestingly. There are different shitot, don't ask me. I don't know, but the podiatrist I went to in Toronto was a chiropodist, I don't understand. The guy in Sobeys Plaza, he's a chiropodist. I don't know. Whatever, but it was convenient because it's Sobeys Plaza. What? It says podiatry chiropody. I don't know. Sure. What is Chiropody? I don't know. But the day of the Emancipation Proclamation, I kid you not, Lincoln wrote a letter talking about how amazing Dr. Zachary is because he cured him of the corns and bunions on his foot, right? So, like, right, I mean, you know, sometimes yeah, really great mind, right? There's, like, some really, right? That's basically what the story feels like, right? Is the whole story, he's going, like, why did he help, right? And therefore, by the way, he helped him a lot. Like, he loved this guy. He, like, gave him political clout and helped him with all types of things, right? At some point, he even sent him to potentially negotiate peace with the Confederacy through Judah Benjamin, who was the second command of the Confederacy, who was a Jew, right? Like,
Judaism.
Seriously, that was what he did, to go to your co-religionist. I kid you not, right? Because he was corrupt, right? So that's basically how this story reads, right? Is why did Rishon Bar Yochai purify all of Tveria? Because they had the best baths. I mean, God, they had good baths, right?
Especially if you've been in a camp right? for 13
right?
years.
That is, right? That is how this story, that is the anchor to the story, right? That is the anchor to this story, right?
So, so the Bavli, the lead up is for it, the setup of the story is leading up to him being in a cave for 13 years. And
good. So let's try to figure out what is going on. So first, let me just give you an idea from Yafeh Zilcha, which I think is very nice, right? In her book on Be'en Agadat Yerushalmi, where she highlights some of these differences, and just her framing. Okay, and then we can talk a little bit some of the details, right? But I think her framing is very nice. And she says, okay, the drama in the Bavli is, I think she's right, is the conflict or the potential conflict, the interface of two worlds, the world of the Beit Midrash and the world outside the Beit Midrash, and specifically how Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai negotiates that tension, right? And it's the story of how he comes from being unable to negotiate that tension to being able to negotiate that tension.
But still choosing to...
Oh, well, but let's follow, right? Let's just follow her framing in the story. Again, the previous story, the previous line is, for what do you get, Askara? Bittel Torah is Rishon Bar Yochai's answer. What about women? Because they call it their husband's Bittel Torah. His entire life is... Torah, in the Beit Midrash, right? And in fact, the whole drama of his life, there's a discussion in the Beit Midrash. He takes a sheet in the Beit Midrash. That's a bit of an extreme position, right?
But he likes the Easter and Gemara for breakfast.
He takes an extreme position in the Beit Midrash. He ends up hiding in the Beit Midrash because that's, if I have to run away from the world, where do I go? The Beit Midrash. And then he has a little bit of interaction with the outside world. What is the interaction he has with the outside world? His wife, right? But as he already told us in his previous line, how does he view the role of women? Yes, they are the ones who bring Bittul Torah, and therefore that's his reaction, is I'm in the Beit Midrash, and he has some interaction with the outside world, except it's his wife, and he says, I can't rely on that. And therefore, what does he have to do? Go into the Beit Midrash on steroids, right? The cave. He lives in this purest, right, platonic Beit Midrash. That is his world, and the outside world is its opposite, and he just can't deal with it, right? He can't deal with it. Like I said, which you guys will get to in a few days, maybe we'll even do it. I the only reason I don't want to do it is because I spent so much time teaching it 4 years ago, and I don't like repeating myself, but because the parallel is in Menachot, then when we did Menachot, I did that Gemara, so, but the one in Lamed Hay of Rishon Bar Yochai, that you shouldn't work, just learn, and God will take care of you, right? I mean, that's his worldview. And the Gemara there even says that many people tried to do Rishon Bar Yochai said, and it failed, right? But he lives in an idyllic world, and he can't handle it. And when he leaves the cave, and he sees people not learning, what does he do? He literally burns it down, right? Like, not just burns it down. That is his superpower. Right? And he gets angry, right? He burns it down. And then what does God say? You can't handle the world. Go back to the cave. Right? Go back to the cave. And what is sort of the conclusion to his story? He learns that there is beauty Yes. Right, that there is potential spiritual beauty in the non-Beit Midrash world. Right? He only manages to actually re-enter society when he sees someone running to get flowers for Shabbos, and he says, oh. Right? Right? Zachor and Shamor, beautiful. Right? Beautiful. And that is the turning point for him. And after that, what is he, right, what is he able to do? Heal things. Right? He's able to, right? His son still burns it to the ground, and he heals it. In that context, what is the point of the Tahara story? That's part of his reintegrating into society. Right? He said, I've now had a miracle happen to me. And, right, and think about it. What is the result of him being in the cave? Before you asked questions, I had 12, right? I would ask questions, you had 12 answers. Now you ask a question, I have 24 answers, right? That was the point of the cave. It made him a bigger Talmud Chacham. Right? And then he is healed and he says, I need to do something for the city, right? Like this person who's been isolated, what does he now feel? Connection. He needs to do something. And in an amazing comment, I think, right? What does he actually say? What's his proof text? You said, oh, what is this crazy proof text? It's from Rabin Shmuel. But what does he actually, he quotes them and says that, what did Yaakov Avinu do when he came into the city as to help the city? What did he do? He built marketplaces.
He made coins
and he made, now, is there something odd about what he says?
Well, in
to me, there's something.
The examples that he brings, it's all economics.
Good, but there's something that's even more striking to me, is that it also, to at least two of them, are the same things that he criticized the Romans for, right? In the beginning of the story, right, Yehuda said, look, the Romans make marketplaces. Isn't that great? And he says, puh, right? Bittel Torah, right? They're doing it for themselves, for Zoinos, right? They just want, right, prostitution, ah! Right? And now he's saying, oh, but Yaakov Avinu also built Merchatzot, and that was actually for the good of the city, right? Meaning that which in the beginning of the story he puts in a terrible light, right? He just does, like, will not see the good in, like, the mundane. By the end of the story, he's using Yaakov, the model of Yaakov, who himself built those, admittedly, for the right reasons. And this is another story within Rosh Hashanah Chai's life, which is that he's a purist. He thinks intention is very important. Kavana is very important. But the things that in the beginning of the story he's criticizing, by the end of the story, he says, you know what? There's value in that. And by learning that lesson, he comes and he heals the city, right? He feels like now I owe something to the average man, right? I'm going to go, I'm going to help people just go around, Kohanim, live their lives by keeping mitzvot, right? Obviously, life is suffused with mitzvot. He's, right, he hasn't changed that. That's what gave him the ability to see the beauty, right? The guy with the two things of flowers, the two things of adasim for Shabbos. But the story is about him going from seeing pure conflict between the Platonic Beit Midrash and the real world, to him eventually saying, you know what, there's value in that world. There's religiosity, spirituality, beauty in that world. Let me actually contribute to that world. Right? That is the framing. Again, there's so much in every detail, in every line. But that is the framing of the Bavli. Right? What about the Yerushalmi? Yeah.
Before that, I still find it weird, though, that in the that in the Bavli story, after all that, after he's able to see the beauty in the world, unless it happened before and I'm mixing it up, didn't he kill Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim after?
At the end, the very end.
At the very end.
Not Rabbi Yehuda by law, Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, the guy who gave him over to the government.
Oh, the guy who gave him over to
the government. There are two Rabbi Yehudas. No, Yehuda ben Gerim, the guy who told him to the government.
Right, okay, fine.
Never mind. That's not so surprising.
Okay, fine.
Right?
I mixed up
you
that.
Made me... You know, yeah. You know,
okay,
what I mean.
Fine, never mind.
And that's why in the Bavli, the story of the cave is itself so important. Right? That's the story of him living this idyllic life, which made it even harder for him to reintegrate into society until God said, Try it again. You misunderstood how you were supposed to deal with this. Yerushalmi, think about the framing. Yerushalmi, again, this is Yahweh Zilcha's, just how she frames the stories. And Yerushalmi, what happens? Think about it. How does the story start? No, actually not. Shichen, he was going around, right? He was going around and he was talking to people. And what was, right? He kills this guy. That is his temper and his, you know, whenever someone's doing an Avera, killing them. That is common denominator between the stories. But going against the Chachamim, in a Chachamim, he's a purist. I don't know what to tell you. Okay. But in the beginning of the story, where is he found? In the field, walking around, telling people to keep Torah, right? So does he have any problem? Well, does exactly. That's exactly my point. In Yerushalmi, does he have any? Does he ever? Is he found in this story at all in the Beit Midrash?
No,
not once. Does he see? Does he have any problem with someone working?
No.
No. What's his only problem? The guy is violating Zichin, right? Meaning, there's in the Bavli. What's the guy? What's his problem? They're working and not learning. In Yerushalmi, what's his problem? You're violating Tzvichin. You're right, it's weird because he's Mekil. But still, fundamentally, his critique is not, you're not learning, it's, you're violating Halacha. Right? Then, the cave, does he end up in a Beit Midrash? No. Do we know why he's in the cave? No. Does it matter? No. Why do we have to hear about the Beit Midrash? Because it explains why he ends up in Tveria and in the hot tubs of Tveria. Right? In the hot springs of Tveria. That is it. The beginning of the story, he's in the field, and he has a run-in, admittedly, right, with someone who's violating halacha, but that's where he is. He has no problem with that. In the end of the story, what is he doing? He's helping people keep halacha in the city.
He's moving from the field to the city.
Meaning, what is there not at all? Yeah, there's no Beit Midrash, there's no tension, right? There's no tension. Right? And if you want to take it farther, when he leaves, right? So, as Yafez Elcha puts it, where's the drama, so to speak, in the Bavli? Well, where, not when, where? No. The real drama is at the opening to the cave, right? The opening to the cave. Right? Where can we leave? Go back into the cave, right? You're not ready, go back to the cave, right? There's that drama. Because the cave represents his pure Beit Midrash, and outside the cave is his, right, is the real world, right? And that's where the tension is. How does he get out? How does he get out of the cave? Eliyahu gets him out of the cave the first time, right? Eliyahu HaNavi has to get him out of the cave. Right? What is his? He doesn't leave because of anything. He's not willing to leave. When does he leave? Eliyahu has to drag him out. And again, what makes him angry? Not Isurim. People plowing. Right? Real life makes him angry. So he goes back to the cave. Yep. He's banished to the cave. In the Yerushalmi, think about what happens. How does he leave the cave? No, he still goes. He goes to the cave when it's safe.
Yeah.
Good. What takes him out?
The fact that he sees that though.
He sees that God cares about the birds. Oh, he says, "If God cares, if God has hashgacha on the birds, and the bird can escape, then if God wants me to live, I'll live too." There's no miracle. There's a baskal and there's a divine voice in both cases, but they're very different, right? In one, it's the divine voice. Eliyahu has to tell him to come out, right? And the second time, the baskal has to tell him to go back in, and then he, right? In the Yerushalmi, what's the story? The Baskal is talking about a bird. And he looks at the world and he says, ah, God is Mashkech in the normal world, Kal Vachomer to me. Meaning, what does he identify with? The world. Right? He comes to the cave and he says, oh, it's safe. How do I know it's safe? Because of God's rules for Hashkacha in the normal, everyday world of the birds and the bees and the, right, the animals and the Shurim Bayochais, right? And then he goes out And he... Now, in both cases, think about the difference in the story of the bath. The first story of the bath, he's mm-hmm. getting the bath, but what's the whole conversation? His son-in-law is there crying, oy, that this is happening to you, and he says, no! Right, this is the conversation in the bathhouse. No, because I became a bigger Talmud Chacham, right? Even in the bathhouse, the drama is about how much more Torah he learned, right? In the Yerushalmi, he went to the bathhouse.
And he enjoyed it.
And he enjoyed it, and it made his skin better, right? He lets himself enjoy this world, right? So he leaves the cave. Is there any, so she says, is there any tension in the Yerushalmi between this world and the world of Beit Midrash? None. We don't hear about him. Is he a miracle worker? Yes. Does he care about people keeping halacha? Yes. Do people who don't keep halacha or don't have faith get killed? That still happens, right? That seems to be true of his personality in Bavli and Yerushalmi. But the story seems to be instead, there's no tension. It's just a story of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai sees godliness in the everyday world. He sees it in the birds. He sees it in the city. He goes around. Right? There is no tension. Right? And this is something that we've seen before, a big difference between Bavli and Yerushalmi, that the Bavli presents so much of its drama in the Beit Midrash. In the Yerushalmi, the drama often just happens in the real world, as it were. The outside world. And you see that very much in this story. That again, in the Bavli, there's so much to talk about in the story. But even just at the basic, it's a story of how Rav Shimon Bar Yochai comes to deal with the pure Beit Midrash versus the real world, how he can't handle it, and how he eventually comes to be able to handle it. Right? In the Yerushalmi, in the Kazet Davar, he is... Again, are there certain similarities? Yes. In both places, is he a miracle worker? Of course. In both cases, is he very demanding of people to keep halacha? Yes. Is he controlled by hashgacha? Yes, though admittedly, in the Yerushalmi, it's, I have hashgacha watching over me because I'm a creature just like a bird. Right? He does have hashgacha, but not because he's the Talmud Chacham Rishon Bar Yochai, but because he's a creature like a bird. Right? There's that, he has no problem with that, with being part of the world. Right? And therefore, even just looking at the framings of the stories, before you even get into all the details, and there's so much to talk about, I'm not even going to pretend that we've covered everything, but even just the framing, the Bavli and Yerushalmi, when you pay attention to it, you realize how different it's presenting Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's worldview. Right? Where the Bavli, the drama, and again, this works with so many stories of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, where in the Bavli, his life is so much about how do you work in the real world versus learn Torah, which is the Gemara in Brachot Lamed Hey. And this is a struggle for him. And therefore, the story being told is his struggle of coming to terms with the fact there is value in the world, especially when people are spiritual and are keeping mitzvot and are sanctifying this world. And in Yerushalmi, that's taken as a given. But that's taken as a given. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai still has that anger and that zeal, but against people who are sinning, not people who are working and not learning. Right? It's a very different worldview to say that living a normal life is a sin versus living a sinful life is a sin. Right? Those are very, very different worldviews. And I think most people can get on board with, at least descriptively, the sinful life is sinful. Right? That is what we call a tautology. Right, rather than normal life is sinful, which is a very extreme view. So because Rashi is supposed to give him the sikha, let's stop there. Like I said, I didn't want to, and for anyone listening also, I am not claiming by any stretch of the imagination that we have exhausted every nugget in this, because there is so much. And if you guys want, I'm happy to do another week on these stories. Right, what I wanted to do today, again, because the Yerushalmi is here, and because I want you to understand how, how Bavli is different from Yerushalmi, and B, how the same story, the same kernel of a story, can be presented in two places, but be presenting clearly two different theological lessons and visions. And the fact that when you understand, again, this has nothing to do with Ron's point, which is more historically accurate, that the fact that you can take the same, clearly the same historical core, right, and there's so many similarities, and yet, retell the story in ways that present such different theological lessons. That's a very important thing to A, recognize in Agadah in general, but also in recognizing how the Bavli and Yerushalmi function differently, not just at the halachic level, but in terms of their hashkafa, in terms of how they present things through the stories they tell. And today I just wanted to get you to the point to realize that that's the type of thing you have to look for if you want to understand Yerushalmi, and therefore understand Chazal holistically, and not just the presentation in one shas, or one midrash, or one whatever, over the other. Okay? So that is just, again, the framing of the stories.